The provisional agenda for this morning's meeting is before the council in document S, agenda stroke 1239. If I hear no objection, I shall take it that the agenda is adopted.
L'ordre du jour de la présente séance fait l'objet du document S, agenda 1239. En l'absence de toute objection, je considérerai qu'il est adopté.
Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted.
Décidé.
In accordance with our previous decisions dealing with this matter, I propose, with the consent of the council, to invite the representatives of India and of Pakistan to participate in our discussion.
Conformément aux décisions antérieures du Conseil et avec l'agrément de celui-ci, je me propose d'inviter le représentant de l'Inde et du Pakistan à participer à nos discussions.
I invite the representative, the distinguished representative of India and his delegation, to take a seat at the council table.
Je invite le représentant de l'Inde à prendre place à la table du Conseil.
I invite the distinguished representative of Pakistan to take, with his delegation, to take a seat at the council table.
J'invite le représentant du Pakistan à prendre place avec sa délégation à la table du conseil.
May I, on behalf of the council, bid welcome to the ministers and high officials of both India and Pakistan who have joined the delegation here today. It will, I am sure, be my pleasure in the course of our discussion of the matter before us to formally introduce the distinguished ministers to the members of the council. You are welcome, gentlemen, here today.
Au nom des membres du Conseil de sécurité, je voudrais souhaiter la bienvenue aux ministres et aux fonctionnaires de l'Inde et du Pakistan qui sont venus se joindre aux délégations de ces pays. Au cours de la discussion, j'aurai l'occasion de les présenter aux membres du Conseil.
We now proceed to the business at hand. In my closing statement to our last meeting here as President of the Council, I stress the fearful potential in the current conflict between India and Pakistan. Since then, substantial military operations have continued, although the Council has adopted two forthright and unanimous calls for a ceasefire. In spite of the hazards intrinsic in this situation, the Secretary General traveled promptly to the subcontinent to give effect to the mandate given him under our September 6th resolution to exert every possible effort to give effect to the resolutions of September 4 and 6th, to take all possible measures to strengthen the observer force, and to keep the Council promptly and currently informed on the implementation of the resolutions and on the situation in his area. You have all, I am sure, read from the report, preliminary report, which has been filed, and from newspaper accounts of the intensive and arduous efforts of the Secretary General to carry out the mandate of this Council. And I understand that he will give us a further assessment of his trip today. I know again I speak for all of the members of the Council when I welcome the Secretary General back from his mission of peace, in which he has carried with it not only the resolutions of the Council, but also the goodwill, the hopes, and the prayers of all people everywhere. In light of the return of the Secretary General yesterday, I have suggested our meeting today, in spite of the short space of time which we have had to examine his preliminary report. I believe the urgency of the situation requires us to lose no time in our deliberations on this matter. I have consulted with members of the council who were of one mind that we should promptly reconvene to hear the Secretary General's important report. Accordingly, I give the floor and recognize the Secretary General.
Dans la dernière déclaration que j'ai faite en tant que président du Conseil de sécurité, j'ai insisté sur le danger très net que présentait la situation qui prévalait entre l'Inde et le Pakistan. Depuis, des événements militaires sérieux se sont déroulés, malgré les deux résolutions unanimement adoptées par le Conseil de sécurité et qui demandaient l'institution d'un cessez-le-feu. Malgré les incertitudes et les dangers de la situation, le secrétaire général s'est rendu dans le sous-continent pour exécuter le mandat qui lui a été confié par la résolution du 6 septembre et pour mettre en œuvre les éléments de la résolution du 4 et du 6 septembre pour renforcer les observateurs et informer le Conseil de sécurité de la mise en œuvre des résolutions et de l'évolution de la situation. Vous avez lu dans les journaux le rapport préliminaire, vous avez lu le rapport préliminaire du secrétaire général et vous avez vu les communications des journaux à ce sujet. Vous avez vu par là quels sont les efforts que le secrétaire général a déployés pour mener à bien sa mission. Et je crois comprendre qu'il voudra vous donner une nouvelle évaluation des résultats de cette mission aujourd'hui. Je suis sûr de parler au nom de tous en lui souhaitant la bienvenue au retour de cette mission en vue de ramener la paix, mission au cours de laquelle il était accompagné non seulement des dispositions et des résolutions, mais aussi des espoirs et des prières de tous. Il est rentré hier et c'est pourquoi j'ai convoqué la réunion aujourd'hui malgré le peu de temps que nous avons eu pour examiner le rapport préliminaire du secrétaire général. Je considère en effet que la situation est urgente et que nous ne pouvons pas perdre de temps avant d'engager nos discussions. J'ai consulté les membres du Conseil de sécurité et tous ont été d'accord pour estimer que nous devrions nous réunir afin d'entendre le secrétaire général. Aussi lui donnais-je la parole.
Thank you, Mr. President. In my preliminary report on my mission to India and Pakistan, in pursuit of the mandate given to me by the Security Council in its resolution of 6 September 1965, I informed the Council of my formal approaches to the two governments and of the replies I had received from them. I now wish to advise the Council briefly of the views that I have formed as a result of my talks with the governments of India and Pakistan. In the course of my talks with Prime Minister Shastri, President Ayub Khan, and their colleagues, I had the opportunity to hear from both sides a detailed exposition of their views on the present critical situation which has developed over Kashmir. I also requested and received from both sides eight memoirs on their positions and views. Since the Council obviously wished me to report to it as soon as possible after my return, I have thought it best, having reached New York at 3:15 p.m. on Thursday, 16 September, to confine myself at this time to a relatively brief report on the impressions and conclusions I have formed during my mission. I have also thought it best at this time not to give a detailed exposé of the views of the two governments as expressed to me, since the replies of Prime Minister Shastri and President Ayub Khan to my message of 12 September 1965 are contained in my above-mentioned preliminary report to the Council and give an official summary of the positions of the two governments on the Security Council's call and on my own appeals for a ceasefire. The following brief account of my own observations of the present situation will serve as a prelude to sudden thoughts which may, I hope, be helpful to the Council in its further consideration of this critical situation. In this tragic war, two closely associated nations find themselves locked in a destructive struggle. Regardless of the merits of the case, the present situation is crippling and potentially disastrous for both nations. Each nation feels that it has been abused by the other, and each is convinced that the other has committed aggression. In common, they have a feeling of having been let down to some extent by their allies and by the United Nations, whose members, for the most part, watch in bewilderment and anxiety the spectacle of two sister nations, with both of which many countries have close links, engaged in a fratricidal struggle. Inherent in this situation are all of the phenomena, the aroused emotions, misunderstandings, long pent-up resentments, suspicions, fears, frustrated aspirations, and heightened national feelings, which throughout history have led to needless and futile wars. These are factors which also make it difficult for the leaders on both sides to respond to the unconditional ceasefire appeals of the Security Council. The present war is clearly to the ultimate disadvantage of both nations and can bring no lasting good to either. Both countries have vast economic and social problems which they have been facing courageously and with considerable success. The war will slow down or even bring to a halt these vital efforts towards economic and social development. Mr. President, the present crisis has inevitably served to harden even further the previous positions taken by the two governments, since both find it impossible to make concessions under the threats of force. Each has a feeling that only outside support has made it possible for the other to commit what it believes to be aggression. The Security Council is thus faced with a paradoxical situation. It has passed urgently and unanimously two resolutions requiring an immediate cessation of hostilities. It has authorized me to exert every possible effort to give effect to these resolutions. Before and during my mission, I have received messages of support and offers of assistance from leaders in all parts of the world. Both sides have expressed their desire for a ceasefire and a cessation of hostilities in the entire area of the current conflict. Nevertheless, up to now, I have not succeeded in securing an effective, practical measure of compliance by the two sides with the Security Council's resolutions. What further causes of action may be open to the Security Council? In older and less interdependent times, the international community could perhaps have now washed its hands of the matter, leaving the parties to fight it out, heedless of the ruin which such a course must certainly bring to millions of innocent people in both countries. Such a course of action is inconceivable today. Moreover, it is not only the fate of the peoples of India and Pakistan which is at stake. Both states are linked in a peculiarly intricate way with the mainstream of world affairs. The very unanimity of the Security Council on this matter and the direct appeals from so many governments are indications of how serious a threat this crisis poses to world peace. Quite apart from the well-being of the two nations concerned, there can be little doubt that a real danger to world peace is now imminent. Mr. President, before advancing some ideas, I feel that I should also state my own views about the role of the United Nations and of the Security Council in particular in the present crisis. The Council is faced, as I've said, with a situation of the greatest difficulty and complexity. It has acted with both speed and unanimity. If success has not yet been achieved in securing compliance with the Council's resolutions, that is all the more reason for making further strenuous efforts for a ceasefire as well as for long-term solutions. I feel strongly that in this situation, when the hopes of the world are focused on the Security Council, which has the primary responsibility under the Charter for maintaining international peace and security, the Council faces not only an exceptionally difficult task, but also a rare opportunity to show that peace can be restored and international harmony promoted by the concerted efforts of the international community. In saying this, I am thinking not only of the well-being and future of the governments and peoples of India and Pakistan, but also of the hopes of mankind for a more peaceful world, which has centered on the United Nations. With the above impressions in mind, and being convinced, as I stated in my second message to the two heads of governments on the 14th September, and in my statement at New Delhi Airport on my departure for New York, of the fundamental desire of both parties to end the fighting, I am taking the liberty of expressing the following thoughts in the hope that they may be helpful to the Council and to the two governments themselves in facing the immediate necessity of obtaining an effective ceasefire. First, the Security Council might now do what it has done once before and successfully in another dangerous conflict situation. It could order the two governments concerned, pursuant to Article 40 of the Charter of the United Nations, to desist from further hostile military action. And to this end, to issue ceasefire orders to their military forces. The Council might also declare that failure by the governments concerned to comply with this order would demonstrate the existence of a breach of the peace within the meaning of Article 39 of the Charter. Second, the Security Council may wish to consider what assistance it might provide in ensuring the observance of the ceasefire. Third, the Security Council resolution of 6 September also calls for a prompt withdrawal of all armed personnel back to the positions held by them before 5 August 1965, and the Council may wish to study means of assisting in the carrying out of this requirement. Fourth, the Council could request the two heads of governments to meet together at the earliest possible time to discuss the current situation and the problems underlying it as a first step in resolving the outstanding differences between their two countries and in reaching an honorable and equitable settlement. Such a meeting might take place in a country friendly and acceptable to both. In this connection, I might draw the attention of the Council to my message of the 15th September to Prime Minister Shastri and President Ayub Khan, the text of which is set forth in my preliminary report, *6683. The Council could also consider the possibility of creating and making available a small committee to assist in such talks, should its services seem useful and desirable to the two parties. Fifth, finally, I may again assure the Council of my availability and of my desire to continue to be of assistance in this matter in any way which may commend itself to the Council and to the two governments. Mr. President, since the Security Council resolution of 6 September also requested me to take all possible measures to strengthen Anmogip, I wish to inform the Council that as a matter of course, I had consultations with Lieutenant General Nimmo, the Chief Military Observer, during my mission. While in the present situation, the role of Anmogip is obviously even more difficult than usual, I have benefited much from the knowledge and experience of General Nimmo. I have taken immediate steps to obtain extra transport and communications equipment to facilitate Anmogip in its task. I have also made provisional arrangements to increase the number of military observers in Anmogip at short notice, should developments make this increase necessary. In its resolution of 6 September, the Security Council asked me to keep it informed on the situation in the area. The military situation will be covered in a separate report to be issued very shortly. I would not wish to let this occasion pass without expressing my warm appreciation and gratitude to the many statesmen and governments from whom I have received, both before and during my mission to India and Pakistan, messages of support and encouragement, as well as practical measures of assistance. Finally, Mr. President, I wish to express my appreciation to the governments of India and Pakistan, both for their kindness and hospitality to me and my party, and for their frankness and helpfulness in their talks with me. I hope and believe that these talks will eventually contribute to a peaceful solution of the present crisis. Thank you, Mr. President.
Dans mon rapport préliminaire.